From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour is made in the classroom in New York State. We know that there are deep disparities in learning, in test scores, in educational achievement, and in graduation rates. A new report gives us a more detailed look at the problem. The report is called Critical Condition: The State of Education in New York, 2024. It comes from the National Parent Union. The report looks at achievement in math and ELA across five New York districts. Just take ELA, for example. According to the report, in Rochester, only 13% of black students and 14% of Hispanic students are proficient in reading, compared to 36% of white students. The report grapples not just with numbers like these, but the socioeconomic disparities and the root causes. And the report includes key recommendations designed to make a real and immediate difference. Let's talk about that this hour. My guests include Ashara Baker, a parent and New York State director of the National Parents Union. Ashara, welcome back to the program.
Oh, thank you so much for having me back, Evan.
And welcome back to Lashana Boose, who is a Rochester parent. Lashana, thank you for being with us as well.
Thanks for having me again.
Listeners, just a technological note, our team's doing a great job. I am hosting this program from another state today. Our guests are in our studio, so there may be just a little bit of a delay, but I think we're doing just great. And I want to start with Ashara and ask you, Ashara, to take a moment and remind listeners what the National Parents Union is all about.
Absolutely. So I'm the New York State Director with the National Parents Union. Same old vibe. We are here to really represent the united and independent voices of modern American families. So we are not just, you know, the average family at home. We have families who have different backgrounds, different challenges, different needs, but we are all looking for the same opportunities for our children. So a lot of our initiatives that we're really trying to amplify really go around just improving economic conditions for families. We're looking at how we can reimagine public education across this country, preparing our children and our families just to navigate this newfound digital world that we're embarking on around AI technology. And then, you know, talking to a lot of folks around issues that we haven't really talked much about is really meeting the challenges around climate changes.
And Ashara, do you want to describe as well a little bit about what made you want to get into this kind of work to begin with?
I am a proud parent of an 8-year-old who is the light of my life. She is, you know, what we would coin a pandemic baby. So when my daughter was entering into pre-K, we were deep into COVID at that point, and she wasn't able to attend any in-person opportunities and programs. So she's really lived off of a screen before she entered into the K-12 space. And then once she entered into the K-12 space, her first month was actually attending kindergarten on a screen. So it's been my charge and my passion to ensure that my daughter's opportunities are opened up beyond what I've seen across the state, but what I've seen across this country. In addition to that, I can't not unsee the damage that has been done to the city of Rochester. So any space that I'm advocating in on behalf of New York State, I proudly stand up and I'm always amplifying the work that needs to be done within the city of Rochester, because at the end of the day, we'll dig into the data, but as you know, we have 2% of eighth graders who were proficient in math as of the 2023 state assessment data. It's unacceptable.
Yeah, we are going to jump into Critical Condition, the State of Education in New York 2024, in more detail in a moment. But just in general, describe for listeners why the union wanted to do this report at this particular moment. Why now?
I mean, right now, parents don't know how their kids are performing in school. What started this entire conversation, and I'd say this is almost Groundhog's Day for you and I, because this isn't our first rodeo having this conversation around this report. This report is really revised and repurposed from the original report that I put in front of you a year ago. Essentially, when I was traveling across the state and meeting different stakeholders and different parent groups, a number of issues came to the surface. One, families didn't know how their kids were doing in school. That was the first concern. Two, the parents who were aware of how their kids were doing in school either had resources that, I mean, they were bleeding out savings accounts, paying $500 for tutors or, you know, up to $5,000 for private assessments because their kid, you know, was tested for dyslexia, dysgraphia, and then other families who just didn't know how to navigate anything. So I wanted to package this report to put together a couple of talking points. One, to show families within the Big Five districts how their district was performing within ELA and math. Two, to speak to some of the areas of opportunity, so legislation that was available for families to advocate upon. Three, to call out the stakeholders, those that we should be holding accountable. So this report speaks to everyone in the conversation. It's going to speak to families. It will speak to educators and superintendents and districts. It will speak to lawmakers. And it will speak to the governor's office because we are all a part of the conversation when it comes to expanding these opportunities for students across New York State.
We will share this report in our show notes, if we can do that later today when we post the audio for this program. And listeners, I would like to hear from you on a couple of different themes here. First of all, something that Ashar is talking about is a story of so many different parents and families that is a pandemic story, but it has become a post-pandemic story too that Ashar talks about. It's not even knowing how your kids are doing. It's assuming that they're doing just fine, and then maybe they move up to higher levels and they really struggle. Maybe eventually students go try to go to college and struggle. And maybe it's on state assessments or other assessments. But a good example of that was ELA during the pandemic. And Ashara and I talked about this last year. It is this idea that, you send your kids to school and they're going to learn how to read. And those are where the experts are. And that's not to denigrate teachers, but there has been a deep debate, and we'll talk a little bit more about that, I'm sure, today, about how kids read and what the system and curriculums are and why they are in place and why certain people have gotten in the room, power holders have gotten in the room to decide what the curriculum is. So I'd like to hear from you, parents. Do you feel like you really do know how kids are doing, and are you comfortable with that, or are you occasionally baffled or struggling with that? And then beyond that, of course, it's this idea that there's a lot of districts across the country that are struggling. What do we do about that? There have been a lot of proposals over the years. We'll talk more about the specific recommendations in this report, but parents, if you, not just parents, anyone listening, if you want to weigh in, you can do that. You can call the program toll-free, 844-295-TALK. It's 844-295-8255, 263-WXXI if you're calling from Rochester, 263-9994, or you can email the program, connections@WXXI.org. Lashana, as a mother of three and as someone who has thought a lot about your own experiences with education growing up, I'd like listeners to hear your story. So maybe take us back first to your own upbringing and what you experienced with school.
Oh, sure. So I attended public schools in a very rural area. So my experience with public schools were very positive. I definitely felt that I was equipped to either go on to college or go into the workforce. And, you know, moving into Rochester, I thought, you know, public school, I had this very positive experience with public schools, so I didn't know anything else. However, you know, coming to Rochester once I've graduated from college was different, trying to navigate that space for my daughters. And so in navigating that space, we had the opportunity to look at private schools and to look at our public Rochester schools and to look at our public charter schools. And so I have found that, you know, in this quest to ensure that your child is being educated and their needs are being met, that you have to do a lot of work to ensure that they're going to be attending a quality school here in Rochester. And so for a working parent, that's quite the challenge, because not only are you working full time, but you have to make sure that your children are getting what they need to ensure that they're going to be, you know, self-sufficient adults once they leave the public education space. And so I'm proud to say that I now have two that are graduated out of our Rochester public schools, both charter and RCSD. But I'm still at it because I have a 7-year-old daughter. And so we still are constantly having conversations about ensuring that she is going to be prepared when she graduates from the public school system.
Lashana, for your older daughters, what did you see in terms of a difference, if any, in charter schools and non-charter?
So when we initially moved to Rochester, we went to Rochester City School District, right? And putting them in the Rochester City School District, that came with a lot of challenges. It came with ensuring that both their needs for not only ELA, but math were being met, and they weren't. And so we shopped around for quite some time to fit not only the right school culture, but the right school curriculum. I think that sometimes when you're selecting a school because we have this neighborhood school model is not always the best fit for the child, because the curriculum that may be utilized in that school may not be something that fits the needs of your child. And so that's what I found out, that specifically for my children, that expeditionary learning wasn't the way, the curriculum that best fit their needs, and we needed something a little bit more traditional. So we had to move schools to ensure that those foundational ELA and math skills were there as they went through the public education system. And so I think that it's important to explain to families what the curriculum is, so they can understand it, to see how it can align with a child's home life, because I think that's important too.
And now with your 7-year-old, how comfortable you are you about the path that your 7-year-old is on?
I think the biggest thing that I've learned in the journey overall is parents are important in this process. They are literally going to be one of the largest factors in how much advocacy, like how your child can ensure that their needs are being met. And so I'm always hopeful, right? Because I'm always at the table. So there's never a moment where I have to question what's happening, because I'm right there at the table. So, you know, there's hope. It's not a perfect system. I do understand that. And there's definitely room for growth. I actually was just having a conversation with Ashara about the curriculum that's being used with my daughter for ELA. And I have some concerns because, you know, the way in which it's, I guess the way it's in which it's being implemented, because they started out with fluency and there was not comprehension going on. And so now they're going back and we're doing comprehension, and it just didn't seem, it wasn't something that I would remember when I was going through school. So, you know, with me understanding that, it helped me to be supportive, not only to the teachers in the classroom, but my daughter when she came home with any homework and things like that.
Lashana, I'm thinking about the countless students who, you know, may not have parents who are as quite locked into what's going on with their educational experience as you are. And again, that's not to really malign anybody. People are really struggling. People are often working multiple jobs, and mm-hmm. You want to trust that when your kid goes to school, that they are in the best possible situation to learn, not only for now, but for the future, to be prepared wherever they're going in the future. And can you just talk a little bit, Lashana, about, you know, maybe the challenge that parents may have, especially if they aren't quite as involved as you are? Again, not to bring anybody mm-hmm. down, but just with the reality of it and how difficult that is for families.
So I had the opportunity to be a participant with the READY organization, which brought it to a very practical place. And so that's how I became engaged with MPU, is through READY. And so, you know, and it's very small ask, right? You know, very small amount of time to really understand what's going on with your child. And so while, you know, we have so many other responsibilities and duties as parents and as community members and in our professional life, we also have to, we must remember how important it is for us to just have that small engagement with our children. And so while, you know, I can't always speak to, you know, what time a parent has or hasn't had, it really talks to some of the organizations that speak specifically to, you know, our working families. You know, how can we best accommodate them to ensure that they understand what's going on? But I think it does go into even more of the conversation, which talks about why legislation is so important. So for families who may not have that extra hour, right, we want to ensure that there's equity when it comes to education. And so that's when we start talking about how can we rethink the legislation that's out there to ensure that even families who don't have the extra time that I have, still their children still have, you know, access to that quality education that's needed to be successful and self-sufficient once they leave that public school space.
Our guests are talking about the National Parents Union's report called Critical Condition, the State of Education in New York 2024. It's a special report from the Parents Union. And as Ashara said earlier this hour, maybe we'll just come back and do it every single year until there's a massive difference, because we were talking about this about a year ago and a lot of it feels pretty similar. But Ashara, if you don't mind, I'm just going to read a little bit from your summary. I don't want to get too bogged down in a ton of numbers on a radio program, but I think what you've put in the summary illustrates some of it. And then, so let me just go ahead and read from that, and then you can talk about really what stands out to you in this report. So on the section just from student performance and academic proficiency, again, this is a report that looks not just at Rochester, but Buffalo, Albany, Syracuse, New York City. And here's some of what the summary finds. Quote, roughly half, 52%, of New York City's third grade through eighth graders are proficient in math, according to the 2022-2023 New York State assessments results for grades 3 through 8 for ELA and mathematics. Less than half of New York City's third through eighth graders are proficient in reading. That's 48%. And disparities are stark across different student subgroups, with students with disabilities, Black, Hispanic, and economically disadvantaged students consistently performing below average. And this is now across the state. So here we go. For instance, in Rochester, only 13% of Black students and 14% of Hispanic students are proficient in reading, compared to 36% of white students. In Buffalo, the proficiency rate in reading for Black students is 19%, 17% for Hispanic students, 43% for white students. In Albany, it's 18% for Black students, 21% with Hispanic students, and white students at 50%. In Syracuse, 14% for Black students, 14% for Hispanic students, 33% for white students. And, you know, so you write that data from major districts like these five show wide disparities, with some districts having alarmingly low proficiency rates in both reading and math. What stands out to you, Ashara?
I would actually group, and it's sad to have this upstate grouping, but we have 80% of Black and Hispanic students in Albany, Buffalo, Rochester, and Syracuse who aren't proficient in reading and math. That's been one of the key data points that I've been speaking to stakeholders across the state about. I can't imagine the amount of not only frustration for that population of students, but just the amount of resources that these schools and districts are lacking to produce that kind of abysmal number. 80% aren't proficient in both reading and math. I'm not happy about the data, and, you know, I'm not happy that I'm, you know, this is becoming our annual gathering here at your studio. What I do know, which has been consistent with the delivery of this report, is that we have solutions. There are ways to really improve on reading scores, math scores. There are systems and curriculums that have been proven and effective that support not only teacher colleges, but also current teachers who can get more professional development to support learners. The issue that stands in front of us in this state is the simple fact that we're unwilling to get out of the status quo, that it's becoming blatantly clear. The work that I do on a national level, I've seen a number of states now who are past the pilot phase, past the implementation phase and into phase two, phase three, because they've been doing this work since COVID around investing in high impact tutoring, around investing in state legislation that blankets the state around the science of reading and evidence-based curriculum. So as a state for New York, we have, there's nothing else for me to say around this report other than we have the solutions in front of us. It is now the time for action. We've been in action for way too long, Evan.
So I do want to add that, you know, as you and Ashara talk about these very dismal statistics, that I was a parent whose children was one of those statistics. And so being one of those statistics is the reason why I can stand with organizations like MPU and READY to advocate for legislation to change some of the educational policies that we have that can change the trajectory of what we're seeing before us.
Yeah, LaShawna, before we go to break here, what we're going to do is we're going to take our only break of the hour in a moment, and we're going to come back and work through the recommendations because, you know, ever since I first met Ashara, she is a solutions person. She is not just a sort of raise hell person, although she's good at that too. But this is about finding real solutions, and we're going to work through the recommendations. We're going to talk about that in just a moment. But LaShawna, I mean, that's a really strong statement from your part that, you know, you understand what it is like to be a household where, you know, kids may be part of those statistics. What's been the most important factor in maybe changing some of that for your own children and for your own confidence that you understand why they were in that situation and how that could be different?
Well, the first thing was understanding the data, right? So, you know, you get this data and you have no words, you know, because you want to understand what it means, because the report card says one thing and then you get these other test scores that say another thing. And so, you know, you don't quite understand how all of that those things align. And so, you know, being able to have, you know, organizations like MPU and READY dissect that data for you so that you as a parent can understand, number one, what it means, so that you can be able to articulate that to your child's teacher. Because if you don't even understand what it means, how can you have a meaningful conversation and advocate for your child in the classroom? And so that was one of the pivotal moments for me, is to really understand what this data meant and how can I best use it to support my child's learning in the classroom.
One other point there that I think is so interesting, LaShawna, mm-hmm. When you say the difference between grades and test scores mm-hmm. and that disconnect, make sure I understand what you're saying. I think what you're saying is, you know, report cards would come home and they'd be pretty good. Mm-hmm. But then you could get standardized tests, mm-hmm. You know, annual exams or third grade or eighth grade, whatever. And all of a sudden, if those numbers are not what you expected based on what the report cards were, then there's this big question mark. Like, how do we get here? Is that what you're saying?
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, and I'll even talk about the timing of it. So, you know, you go through the whole school year and you're praising your kids because you're so excited about the fact that they've been performing so well throughout the school year. And then the whole school year has passed. They have been promoted to the next grade. And then you get these standardized mm-hmm. test scores in the mail and you're totally in disbelief because it doesn't align what you've been seeing all that previous school year. And then on top of that, you're just like, well, what exactly does this mean? And so for someone who went to public schools, I would have never thought I would need to do this much research and homework on what this meant, because it was never an issue for my family growing up. You know, I'm going to assume that all these things aligned, and whenever those things came home to my family, that they didn't have the same questions that I have as a parent. And so when I got the results, you know, the whole school year had gone by and they're promoted to the next grade. And then there's this standardized test result that's saying, you know, my children aren't on grade level. And so, you know, for me, that was really hard because I didn't know what that meant. And I didn't know what I should do. But I did know I did need to do something. And so that's when the conversations, you know, for me started happening. And I, you know, started developing the relationship with my child's teacher and being able to have relationships with Ashara and MPU and their national organization, and being able to, you know, speak with individuals like Dr. Lee and her forming her organization Ready, that encourages parents and actually has a parent action academy to start dissecting this data so we can really understand, you know, what is going on with the state of the education for our children.
I am so grateful to LaShawna for telling the story, and I just want to ask one more follow-up before we get really into the recommendations in our second half hour. But for LaShawna, I mean, I can understand feeling blindsided that, you know, kids coming home with, you know, pretty good grades or pretty good report cards, and then all of a sudden the standardized tests are not going well, and you're sitting there just feeling blindsided, like, how can this be happening? Or how can they be progressing throughout grade after grade after grade on their way toward possible graduation, but the standardized tests are telling you something different? And so the two questions I have, the first is, LaShawna, this is not meant to be a sort of the, I don't want you to sort of point fingers for no reason. I want to ask you, you know, who you blame, but not in a way that is meant to be stirring the pot, more just maybe what you blame or how you assess that, if that makes sense. Like, how,
sure.
Who do you blame for having a system where kids can get pretty good grades, but then all of a sudden they're not reflected in these standardized tests?
Well, I will say part of that equation was I didn't understand the curriculum in which was being utilized at the schools that my daughters were attending at the time. And so I'll say specifically for expeditionary learning, what I learned is that those at the time didn't meet the needs of my children because they weren't grasping the way in which they taught the curriculum. And so while they're doing well in the classroom, those very foundational principles that, according to standardized tests, all students across a particular grade level across this state should understand and comprehend, they weren't, according to the state standardized tests. And so part of it, I had to take responsibility because I said, I thought I knew what it was, but I didn't. But also I do want to place some ownership on the schools because I think it's very important to share with families how you're going to be teaching their children, because it does then translate with how teaching goes on at the home. And I'm the biggest advocate to say that parents are your child's biggest advocate. I believe that holistically, because no one else has more invested interest in your child but you. And so I didn't try to place blame on one person or one institutional organization or the other. I just tried to make sure that I was educated on what it was. And I just wish I would have knew that going in, and I wish the schools would have prepared me with that information before I made that selection. That's why I feel like school choice is so important, right? Because parents need to know the curriculum and the school culture before going in it. You don't want to go in and it just, you know, you think things are great and then you get this surprise that it's not going great. And so I am the biggest proponent, number one, of parents being their child's biggest advocate, but also for schools being accountable to ensuring that parents understand what the curriculum is and how that's going to be taught in those particular classrooms.
Yep, and one other follow-up, and then we'll get our only break of the hour. And LaShana, connected to all of this is perhaps a recent debate, and it's really in the last decade or so, in a district like Rochester, where it's like, you know, should kids get a diploma if they're going to struggle on these kind of tests? And I don't know if you want to weigh in on that, but have you developed feelings about, you know, graduation rates and kids who are moving on? I'd say kids. I mean, they're young adults by that point. Mm-hmm. They're getting a diploma, but are they prepared for different things? How do you feel about that?
Well, I think the diploma is only as good as the skill set they're going to bring once they've completed a program. And so if they haven't met all the requirements for the program, how, you know, is that diploma worth its value, right? And so, you know, if we're going to set a standard for completion of a program, then we should ensure that they have met those skills. It's the same for any type of institution or license we want to acquire in life, whether it's, you know, someone who wants to be a master plumber or someone who wants to be, you know, an esthetician, or if someone who wants to be a lawyer or doctor. They have to meet certain requirements and prove that they've met those requirements. So I think it's important that if we're going to give students a diploma to say that you have completed this journey in your life, that they should be able to say, I have that foundational skill set and I'm able to move forward in the next chapter of my life.
Talking to a couple of parents this hour who are doing a lot of work beyond just parenting their own children. They're helping bring us the story of this report. It's called Critical Condition, the State of Education in New York, 2024. It comes from the National Parent Union. Ashara Baker is a parent and the New York State Director of the NPU, the National Parents Union. LaShana Boos is with us in studio, a Rochester parent, telling her story as well. And we have to take this only break. We've got feedback from listeners, and we're going to work through recommendations and propose solutions here on the other side of this only break. Coming up in our second hour, we're joined by a semi-regular guest who helps us understand polling and data and become smarter consumers of information. Joseph Burgess is talking about the races around the country that will affect national politics, the close Senate races, the kinds of contests that could determine the balance of power. And we'll talk about that next hour. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Let's dig into a little bit of listener feedback before we jump through recommendations. Howie's been waiting on line one, and let's grab that phone call now. Hello, Howie. Thanks for being on the line. Yeah, if we've got him, I can't hear it, Rob. There it is. I'm sorry, Howie. This is my fault. It's just a tech issue. Go ahead again, Howie.
No problem, Evan. Thanks. One of the solutions to a parent's problem is to have their child that's in the Rochester City School District put into the charter system. The charter school system is one that is totally focused on making sure that the kids in the Rochester City School District are learning, because the schools are focused on learning. In the Rochester City School District, which is now losing students hand over fist, it's because they have a dysfunctional system. They have this teachers union, the school board, and the administration working on agendas. And it's not going to get fixed whether we get new superintendents every 2 years. What's going to fix the system is when the balance of power becomes 15,000 students in charter schools, and charter schools actually get the proper amount of money from the state, then you're going to see a completely different system educating and graduating our students to be productive citizens in Rochester. Those children graduate, they learn totally different than in the Rochester City School District. And one more comment to solve the solution. Right now, New York State allows the Rochester City School District to take one-third of the money that a student gets when they go to a charter school. So charter schools only get two-thirds of the funding that the state gives to educate a child in Monroe County. I mean, and so they deserve to get 100% of their funds.
Let me ask Ashara to start with a response there. What do you think, Ashara?
Well, I mean, National Parents Union, we support all public school options. So definitely double down on some of the sentiment that Howie shared. I will say, as a charter parent, we could talk about the numbers, but I will let you know there are thousands of families who are on a waiting list because we do not have in this city enough public high quality school options. So although it is good to amplify that message, we can't rally up the troops and rally up families for opportunities that do not exist here.
And I agree with that. And I think
you want to add there, Howie? Yeah, go ahead, Howie.
Yes, I think that one of the things that needs to happen is that we need to have more charter schools, and we need to rally Governor Hochul and business leaders in this community to say enough already with the Rochester City School District trying to figure out a way to keep themselves alive and let the charter schools.
So I'll chime in and say, I think that, you know, it's important to have this conversation about school choice, right? But we want to make sure they're quality schools. We don't want to just continue to have any school that comes into this community. We want a quality school that will educate the children who are going to be the future leaders in this community, right? Because if we're just continuing to open schools just to open schools, it definitely won't resolve the issue that we're talking about. We want to make sure the schools that we open are intentional with ensuring that kids have met those requirements, those educational requirements to graduate from high school. So we want to be intentional in opening quality schools that will educate children in the Rochester community.
Howie, thank you for the phone call. Tim writes to the program. Actually, let me get John's email. John writes to say, as bad as things are in Rochester, we are not the only city in the country with a high level of poverty. As far as I know, there's not a single city we can point to with a lot of poverty, but also high levels of educational achievement. At some point, we can't reform our way out of it. It seems like a lot of poverty will mean a lot of problems in schools. That's from John. Ashara, I want to give you some time to not only respond to John's email, but talk about the first part of your key recommendations there. Go ahead.
Sure. So I actually included in our second annual version, we looked at the comptroller's report around New York children in need and uplifting children out of poverty. So we dug into his report, which sadly enough, a lot of folks weren't talking about it. But really, the things that stand out, one thing is for certain is that New York State, we are the 44th in the nation. So we are rated at one of the worst levels in poverty in this country, 41st. Second, one in five children are living in poverty currently, and these children are under the age of six. So that's gross at maybe 730,000 children across the state. We know that poverty intersects directly with education because you cannot enter into any building equipped to learn and be present if you're not coming from a stable environment with stable resources. So this is something of a challenge that we have to advocate for at the same time. So I've included it in the report because I'm really calling an immediate action with not only reinstating and expanding the child tax credit, but also within the state of New York, reinstating and expanding the Empire State Child Credit. So this is going to create more funding for childcare. It's going to ensure that we get universal access to meals in schools. We're going to look at how we can invest in more early, high-quality childhood education programs. These are two bills that we need to have passed and expanded in the state of New York to really support decreasing this rate around childhood poverty.
Ashar, before I get LaShawna to weigh in on that, just on the subject of child tax credits, there is, as you mentioned, the Empire State Child Tax Credit, but also there is a lot of momentum on the federal level for expanding and extending existing child tax credits. There's been a lot of research in the last several years on essentially the one-year expanded child tax credit that existed and the pretty remarkable effects it had at pulling millions of kids out of poverty. And you even now, in some flavors, you have just take the Harris campaign and the Trump campaigns. I mean, J.D. Vance has talked in many ways about different federal incentives for families that grow, having more kids, supporting having kids. And he hasn't always put it in those terms, but that's essentially what he's saying. And Vice President Harris has talked about that as well. Are you an optimist right now, Ashar, that this is something that could get addressed and done in the short term, either on the federal or state levels?
I mean, I don't have a glass ball when it comes to that. I can speak to what has resonated with the families that we represent. We know that one of our biggest issues is really speaking to the economic conditions that we're living in. So, I really can't dig any deeper other than saying the families that we advocate with are paying $8 to $12 for 18 eggs. This isn't any way of life that can be sustainable. Families who are looking to not only grow out their family, but also ensure that they're living in districts that are supporting their learners are really going to be looking for candidates who can support economic mobility and their, sustaining and growing their way of life.
Okay. Anything you want to add, LaShawna?
I mean, I definitely agree with legislation that will support bringing children out of poverty. You know, we're definitely seeing, in my personal life, we're seeing how inflation impacts, your daily living and your, household budgets. And so I think it's definitely very important for not only our federal government, but our state government to start looking at these issues and start creating some real solutions to support our working families.
Some interesting emails coming in at connections@wxxi.org. I will get to as many as I can before the end of the hour, but I want to work through the remainder of the key recommendations that come from the National Parent Union as attached to this report that we will be posting. If you want to read Critical Condition, the State of Education in New York 2024, we'll post that with our show notes with this conversation when it goes up later today. Kids need more time, according to the recommendations, beyond that seven-hour school day to catch up. And this is about high-impact tutoring. So, Ashara, we've talked about it. Let's just make sure briefly again, everyone listening understands what you're talking about and in the ideal world, how families access it and maybe how it's supported or who pays for it.
Sure. So, We talked about the differences between high-impact tutoring and regular tutoring. Essentially, it is how much time is devoted in the classroom with tutoring, in addition to how small of the grouping of students, the concentrated grouping, students that would have dedicated tutoring. So it's not the traditional, you get out of school, you go to an after-school center, and you read a book for 15 minutes. It's a little, it's more intense and it is consistent, but it's proven and effective. So I've looked at a number of states who have adopted legislation that really invest in high impact tutoring. And when I was here in your studio a year ago, I was, kind of in an uproar due to the fact that our governor did propose to allocate $250 million towards high impact tutoring last legislative session that wasn't approved and passed. But needless to say, we've looked at a number of districts within the state of New York who have already started to implement and initiate free high-impact tutoring and then also expanding those extended learning opportunities. So a couple points that have to be true. You need to have trained tutors or trained employees who are really utilizing research-based methods. This is how it's going to support those learners within reading and math. In my report, I highlight a couple of things. So within the city of Buffalo, our neighbors, The Western New York Education Equity Task Force actually has a program. It's called the Read to Succeed Buffalo Program. And they have been providing tutoring for not only pre-K through second grade, but now they're expanding into some of the later grades of third through 12th. And essentially, how it's getting funded is they've tapped into state dollars. So within the SUNY Institute, SUNY actually has a set aside dollar amount with their work studies program, which provides not only that teacher pipeline, but also just the initial startup resource. So they're working with the University of Buffalo students who are now coming into some of the schools that they partnered with to help support students with reading and math. And they are into year two of this program, and they've seen some gains, and they're very excited. I'm very excited to see how they're going to be able to expand this program out. At the same time, I just made an announcement less than a month ago that I can't, you know me, like I said before, I'm about solutions and action. So I've been in conversation. I'm not going to call any stakeholders out in this city, but they know that I am a phone call away when they want to get things in order for our city. But I am going to be hosting a pilot program around high impact tutoring, and it's limited spots. I'll share my information at the end of this show, but we're partnering with a group in California who is implementing this program. We're hoping to see some gains so we can expand for the entire city of Rochester. So this is a proven and effective tool that we've seen other states use to decrease that achievement gap. And we just have not spent enough time on understanding that it's going to take more than just the 7 hours in a school day to get kids caught back up.
Ashara, I don't want to miss the opportunity. So if people want to be involved in that, what's the best way to get in touch with you?
Email me directly. So Ashara, A-S-H-A-R-A, at npunion.org. And it is open and free for families who have kids kindergarten through fifth grade who either need support within math or reading.
Let me just, because the hour is going to vanish in a moment here, let me just continue to read so listeners understand the other recommendations attached to this report. You want to see the passage of, you've talked about Assembly Bill, which is really, it's called the Right to Read Act. It requires school districts to provide instructional programming and services in reading and literacy that are evidence-based and align with state standards, and require teachers in grades pre-K through fifth grade to attend professional development courses in the science of reading. And finally, you write, parents deserve to know if their student is behind and how their school, the district, and the state are performing. Without up-to-date performance data, parents are missing the critical information necessary to understand how schools are supporting their students, both in K through 12 and as they prepare for college or a career after high school. And I really think that lines up with a lot of what Lashana has been telling us this hour. Ashara, anything you want to add about these final recommendations here?
Well, the final recommendations simply, as I said, last year, we are among a very small list of states who have not looked at ways to adopt state legislation around early literacy. I think we're one of four at this point. It's unacceptable. I was just on a public hearing for the Dyslexia and Dysgraphia Task Force around state recommendations, and a lot of the challenges that these families are navigating are parallel to challenges that families whose kids are just struggling just in general, who don't have a specified learning disability. So now is the time for the state to really look at how we can turn this crisis around and invest in research-based teaching. We need to understand how kids' brains are learning, but we also need to understand how to teach kids how to properly read. And then in addition to that, I love coming on the show. I'd love to talk about other opportunities and other initiatives with NPU. But again, until our state system becomes more accessible and transparent for our families, I will continue to produce materials such as this, because families do deserve to get access to how their kids are performing in school in a timely manner. And if they're not going to do it, then you can count on the National Parents Union to do it.
Ashara, you are welcome anytime. Hey, we're down to our last minute or so. I just want to read, Travis says, he thinks that creating a county-wide school district would go a long way. He says there aren't charter schools in the suburbs because the resources are already available to help the students in those communities. So let's create a county-wide school district. Lashana, you have a lot of experience in very different settings educationally. You want to just take 30 seconds or so? I know it's tight, just to respond. Travis says county-wide school district. What do you think?
I guess I would say, you know, piloting these type of initiatives would be interesting to see. I know there's programs like Urban Suburban, so I'm wondering, you know, when the listener indicates having a countywide school, I guess I would want to know how Urban Suburban students are performing. So I can't really
say. So you
need
more details.
Yeah,
need more details,
I would. Yeah. I would.
Yeah.
Wouldn't
that's
be great
enough.
Just to fix our system in the city? And I'm sorry. I just had to throw it out there.
No, I hear that too. Rick wrote in to say that, boy, Rochester needs stability with a superintendent. In my 27 years in Rochester, I can't count all the different superintendents we've had. I hear that, Rick. I don't think anybody disagrees with that. But our guests on the program can't control that. They're trying to do their part with
Absolutely.
The National Parents Union. All of the resources we've been talking about will be linked in our show notes. Ashara, thank you for making time for the program. Let's talk soon.
Thank you.
And Lashana Booth, thank you as well. Lashana, great having you.
Thank you so much, Evan.
More connections coming up in a moment.